welcome to QLV. We're here to talk about all things LGBTQ+ in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. I'm your host, Robin Gao, and I use it, fey, and he, him pronouns, and also L and AA pronouns. I'm excited to be talking to you on Trans Day of Visibility today, which is recognized on March 31st of every year. It was started in 2009 by Rachel Crandell Crocker, a trans activist and psychologist from Michigan. She specifically promoted Trans Day of Visibility in response to a lack of trans representation in LGBTQ+ spaces and to have a day to celebrate our joy. I can't think of anyone better to talk about trans visibility than a person whose work captures the often complicated experiences of trans embodiment. Rain Black is a celebrated watercolor artist, professional forager, and community organizer. Rain, it's awesome to have you. Can you tell listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, first off, I use he, they pronouns. I've been an artist since I was like very young. I did end up going to like college for that, as well as like biological sciences. And then I got my master's in epidemiology, and I worked on COVID response. So I think that like some of that informs my art as well. But I've used a lot of traumatic experiences in my life to funnel that into art so that people can like see themselves, because that's kind of like something that I felt like I was lacking in my life and going through stuff. But yeah, I try to like incorporate my life as well as like culture into my work.
Yeah, it's really awesome. And I think that a lot of the topics that you're talking about are some of the reasons why visibility is so important, is creating those spaces where people can be seen no matter what their experiences are. Building off of that a little bit, what does trans visibility mean to you right now as an artist and then also as an individual? I know it's a big question. I think that it's a complicated topic in general, but I would love to hear what you're thinking about right now.
I think I'm thinking about definitely like resistance. I think being trans is like such a nebulous kind of term and like an experience for people. And I think like in the public sort of mindset, there's more like a stereotype kind of kind of image for like what a trans person is. And often there's like a focus on like medicalization and stuff like that. And I think like shifting that view to more of like our lived experience, whether like negative or positive, because some of the pieces that I've worked on are about like trans joy, you know, or just like being represented, feeling like powerful just in our own bodies, our own unique like physical bodies. And I think that that is important right now to see and interact with like real trans people because of like how polarized our identities are right now and the misinformation and stereotypes that are occurring.
Yeah, you use the term medicalization. Mm-hmm. Could you tell listeners a little bit more about what that means for the trans community and like explain it a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. So medicalization, as far as like trans people are concerned, is like when the focus is only on like what surgeries have you had? Are you taking like hormones, that sort of thing? And there's no response beyond that or like interest in the human being behind all of that. Because being trans doesn't require you to go through any sort of like medical procedure. It's a type of human. That's a type of human. I'm a type of human. And that's like part of the stereotype that people really need to like combat.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely feel like I experienced that a lot when I was like first coming out. I had a lot of people ask me like when I was going to be done.
Yeah.
Like as if I was handed by the trans gods like a checklist of procedures that I needed to go through. Mm-hmm. And like for sure that's a part of a lot of people's experience. Gender affirming care is healthcare and vital healthcare for trans people. But I really echo what you're saying in that a lot of times that's the only thing that people think about us in adjacent to like you're talking about your own work. We do art and writing, and we have a long history and culture that I think is also really important to celebrate beyond just talking about our medical needs. So you have a show right now at Muhlenberg. Mm-hmm. It's called Kaminchi, and it explores queerness, healing, indigeneity, among so many other things. Can you tell us a little bit about the show and maybe if you feel like there's any connections to the theme of trans visibility?
Yeah, for sure. So just like starting off, I'm an unenrolled Choctaw and Cherokee descendant, mixed with mostly like Welsh but white. And I explored a lot of things in this show about kind of like in between identities, whether that's like being mixed or being a trans person. You know, these are kind of like liminal sort of identities for a lot of us, and it's a unique place to be. I also identify as Two-Spirit, which is like a Native inclusive term. It's not exactly like Native LGBTQ plus people. It's mm-hmm. it's a different thing, but I encourage you to use the internet to learn more. But in general, I try to like encompass these identities in the work that I do to own that cultural identity, and then also like express it unapologetically, like mm-hmm. through my work, because a lot of it is about pain. There's one piece in particular, Scent Hollow. It is a watercolor of a Medusa head that has ancestral markings that's specific to like Southeastern Indigenous people, which is where my people are from. I'm also originally from Mississippi, so like that region of the United States. And there's a beaded gorgette that goes beneath it. And I was thinking a lot about how a lot of these identities are so polarized amongst people that don't belong to those communities, mm-hmm. and that Medusa heads are also often used for a protection kind of symbol, whether that's like for people that have survived sexual violence of any kind, or also just like a protection kind of thing. So I was thinking about like connection to these mixed identities and how it can be healing in some sort of ways, and we can be like a bridge between communities often.
Yeah, I love that idea of existing as a bridge, even if you're holding multiple identities. I know that you've talked to me before about specifically that gorget piece, mm-hmm. and a gorget being a kind of armor that mm-hmm. might be typical of Indigenous peoples in the Southeastern mm-hmm. region. And I really appreciate that piece for its, like, many layers of meaning. I also think that, I know you've talked a little bit about, like, just all the different kinds of mediums that you use. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm curious if you feel like using different mediums might also help you communicate a lot of layers of identity, because you're talking about being a survivor while also being a mixed Indigenous person and trans. And, mm-hmm. you know, I find that I can see the kind of the different threads in how you mix mediums. So how does that like it work its way into your creative process, I guess?
Yeah, definitely. I think the use of different mediums for me in particular, like each one has qualities to it that transmit something to the viewer, right? Mm. For instance, on the piece that I was just talking about, on the back side of it is a leather backing, and I used moose leather for it because moose like to fight each other. So like there's scarring on the leather versus like deer leather, which like wouldn't have scarring on it. But because the piece is about pain, moose leather felt more true to the piece. There's another like twining piece, which twining is, it's not macrame, but you can think about it like that just to have a visualization. But you use like plant fibers to create these little ropes, and then it's our earliest form of fabric making. But the different plants have different like friction coefficients, and it's just like how rough it is. But I was thinking about releasing anger, mm-hmm. Because I am like in a safer place in my life now. So as I was twisting those and creating that fabric, I'm thinking about like releasing that anger and trapping it within those fibers to like release it. So it transitions from like a really rough fiber, which is yucca, which the friction coefficient is the same as like tires on asphalt. So you can imagine that that's like rough, and I had like blisters on my hands and stuff. And it transitions to mulberry fiber, which is like much softer. So I think my use of materials and different mediums is deeply connected to the actual concept.
Yeah, there's a capturing of the joy alongside the pain, which mm-hmm. I really appreciate. I think sometimes it can be difficult when, I don't know, representation becomes like one note, like if it's only sad or only mm-hmm. joyful, I think it can kind of miss some of the nuances of what it's like to live as a marginalized person. And I appreciate the ways that your art captures those different layers and levels of that experience. I guess I'm curious also about, you've talked a little bit about Indigenous identity in your work. Speaking on the theme of visibility, how do you feel like visibility is for trans Indigenous people, especially in our area in the Lehigh Valley? We are living on Lenape and Susquehannock lands, but I've often found that it's an area where a lot of people don't engage in talking about Indigenous identity a lot.
Yeah, it's It's difficult because some people do know their ancestries and are connected with community, but like, so Pennsylvania doesn't have any recognized tribes. Pennsylvania doesn't have tribes that are that it recognizes, whereas like other states and like nationally, federally recognized tribes exist, which is kind of unique. And but it makes it like harder for us to be visible. There are like certain events like the Roasting Ears of Corn event where like Native people get together at the Indian Museum in Emmaus. But it's really like difficult to find community mm-hmm. because A, Native people look like every type of person. We're every shade of color. But people have this like stereotypical view of Native people. And anytime I like talk about it, people outside of the community can be a little rough and mm-hmm. like still operate within those stereotypes, which is challenging because you're trying to share culture with people. And then you're also facing this like pain.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, however you want to look at it, it's a pain. And it can be difficult, but it's also like really worthwhile because sometimes you'll meet people that are directly like within your same tribe or like your group of people, and the connections that you build are like so beautiful, and it's kind of like it's something in your blood. You like recognize each other, and it's something that even despite the pain of being like a visible Indigenous person, it's always worth it to reconnect. Mm-hmm. Always worth it. It's just like tough to be Indigenous, but it's worth it. Another thing I would like to say is like an organization that I've done a lot of work with is WEDOC Todwin, which is the Native Knowledge Center out in Berks that promotes the visibility of Native folks in Berks County. And it's been like a real joy to engage in culture that way and like share things that I know. Even though like I'm obviously like not in the southeastern region anymore, so it's like I don't meet a lot of my folks locally. But when I do, it's really beautiful. But I can connect with like other people of other tribal ancestry.
That's really beautiful to build that larger intertribal community, and I appreciate you speaking more to that experience, especially on the subject of visibility, mm-hmm. because so many different ways that we need to increase visibility for many different communities. So thank you for talking about that. Mm-hmm. Awesome. So we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back continuing our conversation on trans visibility. I'm your host, Robin Gao, and we'll be back in a few with our guest, Rain Black.
WDIY has been broadcasting in the Lehigh Valley and beyond for 30 years, providing news.
These planes were hijacked.
The Bethlehem Steel Corporation will end its steelmaking production in Bethlehem.
We hope that you enjoyed hearing from the Dalai Lama.
Local public affairs.
As I say, it's a race of interest.
What we're experiencing today will later on be studied.
And music.
My name is Janice Ian.
Our guest, Lake Street Dive.
In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Petey Yarrow from Peter, Paul, and Mary.
WDIY, since 1995.
Hello, welcome back to QLV. I'm your host, Robin Gao, here with my guest, Rain Black, local artist, forager, and community organizer. We're here today talking about Trans Visibility Day, because today is March 31st, a day where we recognize trans visibility. I wanted to talk a little bit more about specifically trans visibility. This day began in 2009, and so we're not quite at a 20-year mark, but it's, you know, we're starting to get there. I guess I'm curious to hear what you think about where you feel like trans visibility has shifted since maybe this day was started. What kind of changes have you seen, either in broader movements or in movements locally?
Yeah, I think as far as my experience goes, like, things kind of started out from, like, a tolerance sort of mindset,
mm-hmm.
Especially, like, when I was younger. And when I was little, I wasn't out as trans. I knew that I was different, but I didn't have like the words for it.
Mm-hmm.
So it shifted from like a tolerance mindset to when I was like an adult, and I'm a spicier human. So I didn't necessarily like come out. I just kind of like presented myself, and I'm like, here I am. You can mm-hmm. deal with that or not, you know. And that doesn't always like sit well with people, but like it's just how I am. And I think that now there's kind of like two schools of thought of like that quote unquote traditional like coming out to people.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also like the way that I did it, where it's just like, you have to deal with this now,
mm-hmm.
Which there's no like right or wrong. It's just like whatever's right for the person. But I think now there's like a much more like nuanced view of trans people, especially like with, you know, considering like non-binary identities, which like that's just a person that identifies like outside of the binary of men and women. Mm-hmm. And that's like an umbrella term in and of itself. But, you know, just like that there's no one way to be trans. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to try to pass as a cisgender person. And cisgender is just someone that identifies with the gender assigned at birth. But, you know, you don't have to. That's not the goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that that's really beautiful.
Yeah, and that trans identities span a really wide range of different experiences. Mm-hmm. And I do really appreciate that. I feel like there is a lot more visibility for trans people. I think of like the first early, air quote, early days when I think I came out maybe, I'm coming up on maybe 10 years ago, I think. Actually, a little over 10 years ago. And I think that there was a time period where people were just generally not as aware of trans people. Mm-hmm. I know growing up, I didn't know that trans people were like, air quote, an option.
Yeah, same.
You know, I think that I was curious about the subject. Now I really feel like I work with kids a lot and people are very aware. Like, I've taught art classes before where like I generally don't start a pronouns conversation just because I feel like in a lot of those spaces, I'm only there for a day and I'm like, I'm focused on teaching you how to make an origami crane. But a lot of times they'll ask me and be like, what are your pronouns? And I appreciate that they pick up that I'm some kind of gender creative human.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really am glad to see that. I think that the thing that becomes hard operating right now is that a lot of times with more visibility also becomes more backlash.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of like the moment where we're in right now is like navigating mm-hmm. what that looks like and how to have visibility and safety at the same time, which is definitely difficult for any marginalized group. That leads me to my question of like, where would you like to see Trans Day of Visibility continue to move in the future? I know that I've even seen in the Lehigh Valley, we usually do like flag raisings. And this year, Eastern PA Trans Equity Project put on a Trans Day of Visibility like art afternoon at mm-hmm. the Ice House, which I think is really cool. But what else kind of things would you like to see Trans Day of Visibility like move into?
Yeah, I definitely think that the event at the Ice House is like a step in the right direction, because that's an opportunity for people that aren't trans or just allies or what have you to directly impact like positively trans people locally. I think that honestly, I would like to see like more trans people that are maybe safer politically to do more protesting
mm-hmm.
Or just like activist sort of work.
Mm-hmm.
Because the point of Trans Day of Visibility in my mind is to be unapologetically trans in public.
Yeah.
You know, and especially like if there's places that are really unsupportive, us being there physically can be like really impactful to improving situations. Especially like if media outlets help spread that message.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, nothing has to be like big or scary, but just being like a human out in these spaces can be really impactful. So I think I would like to see more activism as well as mm-hmm. as just like opportunities for the greater community to give back to trans people, because it is so difficult for trans people to get jobs because of discrimination, or, you know, we face like bigger health disparities and economic disparities than your average person. So I think that both of those things are critical.
Yeah, I definitely see as like what I would want non-trans people to think about on Trans Day of Visibility is like, how can I make the world safer for trans people mm-hmm. to be visible? Because I think that we're not always quite there at that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that since this year has started, I've seen more people curious about like, how do I support trans people locally?
Mm-hmm.
And there's no like one easy answer to that. I think especially attending events like that day that's at the Ice House that celebrates artists is really great. Attending local flag raisings mm-hmm. and asking about people who are organizers or who are speaking, mm-hmm. like, how can I support trans people more? In this area, I feel like Eastern PA Trans Equity Project does a lot of that work. Mm-hmm. And so I really recommend it as an organization to check out.
Mm-hmm. There's also like mutual aid groups as well. Like I'm an organizer for Queer Trans Lehigh Valley, which is, it's not a 501c3. We're just a group of people that help each other.
Yeah.
We do like a lot of events and stuff, but we also fundraise directly for trans and queer people in general. And I think that that's really impactful.
Yeah, definitely. For sure. Finding a place, since we're getting close to the end of our episode, I felt it could be a nice topic to talk about. Who are some trans people whose visibility has maybe made you feel safer, mm-hmm. or made you feel inspired, whether it's mm-hmm. as a human or as an artist?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the person that comes to mind is Ray Ukon, who's my beloved friend, who's a fellow artist. I just find them really inspiring as a human. They also weave culture into their artwork, and I think that that's part of where I got the inspiration to like do that more, because those pieces, his work just feels like so personal, mm-hmm. and it feels like looking into someone's heart.
Yeah,
you know, and I think that he is just like really unapologetically himself, and I think that that's really beautiful. And so like that has definitely been his work, and just him as a friend and a human has been really impactful to me.
Yeah, I really love I think some of the first pieces that I saw of Ray's were of incorporating like lots of different kinds of fabric, mm-hmm. and I guess we call it like fiber arts.
Yep.
And I feel like a lot of the work feels very like tangible and mm-hmm. warm, so I definitely totally get that. Can you think of anybody who might be like a historical figure too? I was trying to think of it myself, and I was like, I feel like I'm very inspired by the organization STAR, which was led by Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera, which essentially was just, I think it's similar to a lot of like the mutual aid groups in that they just wanted to try to make sure that people stayed housed and fed. I think that they're models of really just like community supporting mm-hmm. each other. And they were really radical in a lot of different ways, as creative people, as artists, mm-hmm. and as visible trans people. I think that they're people who have always inspired me.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Because I think that people don't realize how much power and impact they can actually do on their own. Because mm-hmm. You're not actually alone. You have so many people around you, and building community and doing things outside mm-hmm. of political structures or just like organizational structures mm-hmm. is really powerful, and it's a lot easier than working within those structures. Like, we keep us safe.
Yeah.
We keep us housed, fed, all of that. And that's how we survive through moments like in history like this.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And something else I've always appreciated about just everything I've been able to read about that organization, and specifically Sylvia Rivera, is like her work in like calling other trans people in too. There's a speech that you can still see on YouTube of her addressing like a gay liberation gathering, where she's essentially saying that she's felt kind of left behind by a lot of the cisgender, especially white LGB people, who maybe haven't been as embracing of trans folks.
I have been beaten. I have had my nose broken. I have been thrown in jail. I have lost my job. I have lost my apartment for gay liberation. And you all treat me this way? What the f*** wrong with you all? Think about that. I do not believe in a revolution, but you all do. I believe in the gay power. I believe in us getting our rights, or else I would not be out there fighting for our rights.
And so I always take her also as an inspiration to say, like, we can call our own people in too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that people like her are people I try to think about on Trans Visibility Day too, whenever mm-hmm. I feel like maybe sometimes it's a little uncomfortable being a public trans person.
Yeah, it totally is. And everybody's got, like, their own baggage.
Yeah.
And part of being in community is, like, working through a lot of those troubles together, you know? because you can just call people in because mm-hmm. we care about each other. And it sounds kind of like built up and hokey, but it's true. Like if you just care about people as people mm-hmm. and take the time to call them in, you can create this like stronger bond and help each other better in ways that you might not think that you can.
Yeah.
Because we're so disconnected from our neighbors and our community and stuff like that. But there's an opportunity there that people can grab yeah. that they don't realize, I think.
Yeah. I guess I would, the note that I want to like kind of end on is visibility is so important, but so is safety. So mm-hmm. if for somebody who's trans or not, you know, it's mm-hmm. it's a good time to think about what can I be doing to make my trans community a little bit safer. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be moving mountains. It can be as simple as buying someone's dinner,
yeah.
helping somebody pay for rent, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of stuff. It really makes an impact.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much, Rain, for this wonderful conversation about Trans Day of Visibility. I've been your host, Robin Gao, with QLV, and I hope that you'll tune in again next time.